It's the Geek Cave Podcast's live annual Extra Life Marathon for Children's Miracle Network. Donate now to help your local Children's Miracle Network hospital at geekcavepodcast.com. Now, here are your hosts, Darren Wright, Justin White, and Chad Savage.
And welcome to Geek Cave Live. It's movies. I'm Darren.
I'm Justin.
I'm Chad. Clever intro here. We are playing Extra Life. We are in the midst of Shredder's Revenge. And for the first time in 2 hours, well, first time in 5 hours, I am not playing a video game. And I don't know how I feel about it. But there is still plenty of time to donate. Check out extra-life.org, and you can search for us, or you can go to the website, geekcavepodcast.com, and you can find us there, and there should be a nice, friendly link. So, we would like to extend our thanks to all of you who have donated, and our thanks to Shirtosaurus, digging up clothing from the past so you can look rad today, with free shipping on all orders within the U.S., plus great t-shirt, sweater, and hoodie designs on everything geek chic. Whether you're a fan of old-school gaming, anime, 80s cartoons, or something in between, find something for you at Shirtosaurus.com. And we are also thankful Gamefly sponsorship with membership options for every budget, plus gifts for gamers of all ages. Gamefly has thousands of titles you can keep as long as you want. When you're done, just send it back with the postage-paid envelope for a new one. Or keep it forever, pay a lot less than in-store prices. And they just updated their rewards program where you can stack up to $20 in coupons toward any purchase. Sign up for a free 30-day trial right now using the link at geekcavepodcast.com. Now, for those of you who are listening to this on the podcast as opposed to live, there is still time for you to donate. All you gotta do is go to the website, geekcavepodcast.com, and the nice friendly button will be there. Justin,
yo,
hand me that controller and tell me about a party you've been to.
Hit it, fellas.
Pilot party! Pilot party!
Pilot party!
Ladies and gentlemen, Liza Minnelli.
Welcome to Pilot Party, where I review an entire TV series based only on the first episode. Why only the first episode? Because that's all I had time for while raising money for Children's Miracle Network hospitals.
Nice.
Yes, that's a cheap plug.
Yep.
So the year 2002. We see an alien spacecraft searching various cities on Earth, just as a real estate developer hammers in the for sale sign on a new gated community. Suddenly, there's a small group of people behind him asking if he takes cash for all the houses.
What?
This is The Neighbors, a 2012 comedy that first aired on ABC.
Neighbors?
I don't remember that.
Fast forward 10 years to 2012. The alien Poopar is running out of battery, and they didn't pack the charger.
It's I'm not going to tell him anymore.
Yeah.
Nope, you're Leo.
You're Leo.
It is the only way that they can communicate with their home world. A couple of them leave, having sold their house. Enter the Weavers, a dysfunctional family whose father, Marty, is looking to elevate the family's lot in life. So he buys a house without talking to his wife, Debbie. That goes about as well as you expect.
I know people who would make that call.
Yeah. So they move into the gated community and are greeted by the neighbors, led by community leader Larry Bird. There's also his wife, Jackie Joyner Kersey, and their sons, Reggie Jackson and Dick Butkus.
Okay.
During a friendly family dinner, Dick Butkus, the youngest, reveals to the youngest Weavers that he is an alien. And by reveal, I mean he shows his true little green man form. This scares the kids and the jig is up. The entire neighborhood reveals their true form and cue commercial break. They are the Zabkronians from Zabkron.
Sure.
And they have been scouting habitable planets in case their planet gets too hot. See thinly veiled climate change reference here. The rest of the episode revolves around the cultural differences, notably how Larry Bird casually dismisses all of Jackie Joyner Kersey's ideas simply because he carried the children to term. By the end, the Zabkronians convince the Weavers to stay and keep their secret. Neighbors rejoice, Yay. This was silly. It's your typical fish out of water story. If the water were also a fish out of water. It's not a perfect metaphor. Don't at me. It's everything you love and hate from a 2010s sitcom. Now for my predictions. The rest of the series is a comedy of errors and cultural misunderstandings. They learn, they grow, they love. Boy, do they love. The teenagers from each species get it on Area 51 style and produce a new being. This alien-human hybrid is fueled by teenage angst and hell-bent on destruction. With some cloning tech, it creates an army. Using time travel, it makes an alternate timeline where this new species goes from planet to planet, trophy hunting the deadliest creatures from each world. That's right. This is the surprise Predator prequel you didn't see coming. Both franchises are owned by Disney. Prove me wrong. I give it 3 out of 5 drained and powered down poopars.
Oh, boy.
Wow.
That was a poopar, all right.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Justin? So there are a lot of shows out there that live in the memories of TV land. Some of them are given new life, and some are relegated to the dustbins of history. This segment of the show asks you about one such forgotten piece of television history and asks, should we review it? It's good then. The original's just as good now. Reboot it? The idea is sound, but we can modernize it and capture some magic. Revive it? What are these characters doing after a couple of decades of growth and development? Or refuse it? Chad, intense staring commences. Taking place in Harmony, this show lasted a stunning 2,231 episodes, spanning 2 different networks for original episodes, first on NBC and then NBC and then on a DirecTV channel, and even seeing some syndication on the Sci-Fi channel. The show featured the relationships between the Cranes, the Russells, the Bennetts, and the Lopez Fitzgerald. It also featured a living doll named Timmy, who is the companion of the witch Tabitha. It replaced Another World on the daytime soaps and was created by the guy that decided that Marlena from Days of Our Lives should be possessed by a demon. This is Passions.
Okay, yeah.
Passions was a satire of daytime soap operas while also being one. It did a lot of things, the most interesting to me being that in 2003, Passions submitted an orangutan named Bam Bam for consideration. Because Bam Bam had been portraying the recurring role of Precious. Precious was the non-speaking live-in nurse and caregiver for elderly Edna Wallace and held an unrequited love for Louis Lopez Fitzgerald, which was all depicted in elaborate fantasy sequences.
Uh-huh.
The Emmys disallowed the entry.
Huh. I call shenanigans, but okay.
Still a better love story than Twilight.
So, Passions, what do you think? Review, reboot, revive, or refuse? Went off the air in 2006.
I mean, I vaguely remember this. It was pretty much Timmy that, like, oh, yeah.
Intense staring continues.
Okay, we're going to refuse there.
I mean, they submitted an orangutan for an Emmy.
Yeah. Yes, they did.
I'm on that alone. I'm going to go with a review just because I vaguely remember it and I need to. My gotta know threshold's been crossed. Yeah, I gotta know. I've gotta figure out if it's as bad or as good as it.
As you remember.
Yes.
See, what has me in the review category for this is, no joke, there is a particular episode and a scene in which somebody walked into the room and the characters are watching an episode of Passions on TV.
Of course they are.
Only for it to be, like, interrupted by, like, a government special report.
Nice.
But, yeah, I was on board for it. I think that it's a fun and funny soap opera. It's like the second funniest soap.
Since soap.
All right, so we are on to some trailer park roundup.
All right.
We got some trailers for you. Ant-Man and the Wasp, Quantumania. Well, hello, Kang. It's nice to finally have a villain for this next phase of things. Spirited. Okay, A Christmas Carol is one of my favorite stories. I have liked every version that I've ever seen, with the exception of Scrooged. And I'm looking forward to seeing this Ryan Reynolds.
Like Scrooged?
No. And I'm looking forward to seeing the Ryan Reynolds, Will Ferrell version.
Yeah.
Bill Murray didn't sell me on his transformation.
Ah.
Fair. A Man Called Otto. Okay. I really like the movie A Man Called Ove, which this is based on. And I don't want to like it, this A Man Called Otto. But damn it, Tom Hanks.
I know.
How dare you make me want to watch a remake?
I know.
Strange World, coming out of Disney. I'm having feelings, and I don't know if I like feelings.
I don't know this one.
Yeah, an adventurer goes missing. Years later, his son, who is not an adventurer, is basically called into service. And his son, who wants to be an adventurer, tags along. Adventure ensues.
It's not ringing any bells.
Creed 3. With any luck, there'll be three more of these, and then we can get compelling lists about which is better, this or the Rocky franchise. Also, after watching the trailer, I'm more invested in this story of Creed 3 than I am the previous two Creed movies. And finally, for today at least, the Super Mario Brothers movie. Well, that Mario didn't sound at all like Bob Hoskins.
It's-a-me, Chris Pratt.
Hey, it's Chris. Hey, it's me, Mario. We gotta go.
Okay, so I got a question.
Yeah.
And we've got all sorts of good answers for things.
We do, yeah.
Maybe even some right answers for some things.
Sometimes.
But I want wrong answers for this one.
All right.
With the proliferation of the phrase, it's Morbin time.
Yes.
As a catchphrase. Clearly the studios are going to push for every hero to get a catchphrase.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it belongs in the movie or not. So with Black Panther coming soon and Ant-Man Quantumania after that, what catchphrase is going to be part of the cultural zeitgeist?
For Ant-Man, as he runs into battle, I can lift 10 times my own weight.
Okay. Let's see.
I just think it's going to be a for Anthony every time.
Now for Ant-Man, it's going to be sorry to bug you every time he interrupts a crime.
Just keep shrinking.
Okay, for Black Panther, how about... Pss, 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 pss.
I was going with, let's go, Thundercats.
Ho!
Of course, it's a Disney property, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So probably Hakuna Wakanda.
Yes! Hakuna Wakanda, do-do-do-do.
What a wonderful place.
Okay. Adamantium place.
I've got a lot of reviews. And I think we're probably all going to chime in on the Werewolves by Night, so we'll just save that one to the end, all right?
Well, yeah.
Fair.
All right. So I watched The Munsters. This love letter to The Munsters is written in such a way and filmed in such a way I didn't know who the intended audience was. I don't know if it's for kids because of all the silly jokes, or if it was for the boomers who watched the original show because of all the silly camera work. It's not bad. It's just not good.
Mm.
There's clearly talent and passion behind it, but it just didn't land. This one is a fine movie with friends during October. Like, if you got a group of friends that you want to laugh at a movie and just kind of poke fun at it and not have to think too hard, this is that movie.
Is it a movie, or I thought it was a TV series?
Well, the original Munsters was a TV series.
Yes.
But this is a standalone prequel to the TV series movie.
Okay.
Yeah. This is how the Munster family became the Munster family.
Gotcha.
Without the kids. Honestly, if the movie had been in black and white, I think it would have been better. I'm giving it a B.
Okay. Fair.
I watched Blonde. So here we have an example of a movie that is well done, that tells the story it means to tell in the way that it means to tell it. And I'm going to tell you that watching it will be one of, if not the most depressing thing you will do on the day you choose to cue this one up. Telling the story of Marilyn Monroe was never going to be an upper. And the movie is a dramatized biopic, and it's simply not pleasant to watch. Do not recommend. And it's not very often that I don't recommend an A-minus movie. You know, it gets a high rating because, like I said, it does what it sets out to do. I just didn't like what it set out to do. So Hocus Pocus 2. Did anybody else watch this one?
No.
Nope.
Okay. Some characters need, nay, deserve a redemption arc. You know who doesn't?
The Sanderson sisters.
Winifred Sanderson. This is the great failing of Hocus Pocus 2, despite all the joy that it brought me in watching it. Winnie is supposed to be evil. Instead, we got a backstory that made her misunderstood and abused, and it just set the whole film up for this redemption story. I don't need that. Of course, after saying all that, the performances are on point. The child actor that they got to play young Winifred nailed it. It was beautiful. Even in my dislike of why they put it in there, it was very well done. The story's good enough. I like the world that they fleshed out. And the song that they sing this time around is pretty good. I'm going to get you.
Yeah.
Get you. It's pretty good. But it's not going to be the Halloween obligation that the first one is.
Oh, yeah.
So this one's a solid B, you know, B movie to me. So on to Werewolf by Night.
So yes. Good. So good.
So good.
So good.
At 55 minutes long, this is more of a TV special than it is a movie.
Yes.
That being said, I think that it is one of the best offerings that Marvel's put out on the small screen in a while.
Oh, God, yeah. Yes.
It doesn't overstay its welcome. It tells a compelling story without feeling the need to explain literally everything. And it wraps up pretty nicely. Character designs were well done, so that they were distinct. Ted may be my new favorite MCU character right after the flaming sousaphone. And just... quite honestly, it made me want to see more. Also, it has now made werewolves and vampires canon in the MCU lore.
Uh-huh.
Yep.
Uh-huh.
So tell me, you guys. I mean, You watched it?
Yeah.
Tell me your thoughts. We don't so much round table Werewolf by Night, but tell me what you're thinking is.
Okay. Yeah, I really enjoyed it. I loved the, the little homage to Somewhere Over the Rainbow. Toward the end.
Mm-hmm.
Love the re-injection of color into the world.
Oh, yeah, that was good. Know?
There's not a whole lot that I disliked about it, because even with it black and white, as my spouse said, it was shot in such a way where if black and white is hard for you to track characters, it was not in this case, you know?
Yeah.
It was not difficult to... Sorry, I just got distracted by what we saw on the screen. It was not hard at all to keep track of the characters. The designs were good. The wardrobes were good, you know.
Mm-hmm.
The stepmother was appropriately, you know, I hated her.
Yes.
So, yeah, start to finish. It was a great introduction of Elsa Bloodstone to the MCU.
Oh, yeah.
As well as Man-Thing, as well as...
It was an incredible introduction of Man-Thing.
As well as Jack Russell. So, yeah, start to finish... Absolutely. I can't really find too many flaws with it.
Oh, no. It was beautifully done. I enjoyed every frickin' moment of it.
I love the most of it's black and white, but the bloodstone is red.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So, yep. The Statue of Liber Kang. I believe they're calling it the Statue of Tyranny.
Yes.
Yeah, we're still playing Shredder's Revenge.
And I'm actually with you, Gungraves. Munsters was surprisingly fun. It was one of those things where I was so confused throughout it because I didn't know who it was for. I didn't watch the TV show, and I wondered if watching the TV show would have made it better. Also, when the Nosferatu-like vampire did the dance at the end of the date, it kind of cemented in my head what kind of movie I was watching. Was not particularly thrilled with that. Do we have any other things before we do?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I got something.
All right.
Well, actually, first, I have two things.
All right, two things.
Cartoon Network Studios.
Yes.
Cartoon Network Studios was Warner Brothers. You know, this whole Warner Brothers Discovery merger has really kind of taken me on a whirlwind.
Yeah.
You know, like good emotions, bad emotions, good emotions, bad emotions. They basically got rid of Cartoon Network Studios after 20 plus years. So I figured we should at least take a few minutes. We don't normally talk about news on the show, but I figured we should take a few minutes to talk about our favorite Cartoon Network Studios properties. And I think you can't really have that discussion without Genndy Tartakovsky's two biggest projects, Samurai Jack and Powerpuff Girls. So many good memories.
Dexter's Laboratory.
Yeah. Dexter's Laboratory was going to be it. Courage the Cowardly Dog.
Yes. Love Courage.
And of course, everyone's favorite, Teen Titans Go.
Shut up.
You are so mean to me.
Yeah.
Yo. Just because it's been the more successful Teen Titans property.
Oh. So, all right, well, fine. What was your favorite Cartoon Network property? Was it Teen Titans Go?
No, it was easily Powerpuff Girls. It's the It's kind of like my favorite MTV show is Daria. Yeah. You know, it's just that the one that eventually I go out and I find the entire series on disc. To be able to say, yep, this is the one that I want. Although, I will say that Courage the Cowardly Dog was on at the right time slot when I was in college to be able to drink and watch. And we would turn off the sound of the TV show and we would turn on Uncle Cracker's latest album at the time. And we would watch the characters sing.
Yeah.
And that, by the way, is a really fun game to play while you're drinking, but also with the Flintstones, because they didn't have distinctive open and shut mouth, like vowel sounds and so forth, other than maybe an occasional lip protruding kind of thing.
Yeah,
but it was just open and close, so any music you wanted to play, so long as it was vocal heavy, it just worked.
Yeah,
I'm sure 8 Mile would have done great. So, yeah. But yeah, the Powerpuff Girls, far and above my favorite Cartoon Network property. I like Samurai Jack, but I didn't get a chance to watch as much of it.
So, fun fact, Seth MacFarlane got his start in the animation business working for Cartoon Network, and he actually got to produce a short on their What a Cartoon series, which is where Powerpuff Girls was first introduced.
Uh-huh.
And the thing that Seth produced was a short about this idiot fat guy and his talking dog, which he then later hawked around, developed a little bit more, and became Family Guy. So, you know, There's that. I have a lot of fond memories growing up, spending summers with my grandparents who had satellite at the time. And I only had network television. And I would stay up for hours watching Cartoon Network and was introduced to classics at the time, but also the new stuff like Powerpuff Girls and Dexter's Lab and all that stuff. And it was just... it was amazing what I was watching.
Right.
So, I mean, while it's gone as an studio, it's been folded into Warner Brothers Animation.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not like those properties are gone. It's just sad the way it's come about.
Yeah.
how are we supposed to do this?
Supposed to, like, somehow take out all of those stupid ghostly shredders at once. But they keep popping up.
That seems... See, you get to a point like this in the game, and it looks like it just stops being fun.
Yeah.
It's like, we're going to do this thing. It's not going to be terribly fun.
Yeah, I remember, like, Super Shredder was, like, the most impossibly hard boss after the rest of the game was nice, you know? All right, but for me, you know, I kind of go back and forth between, like I said, Samurai Jack and Powerpuff Girls. Powerpuff Girls was one of those generational kind of shows, you know?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Samurai Jack, however, I think I love just a little bit more. It was just cool.
It was
cool, you know?
Was Johnny Bravo also on that?
Yes.
Yes.
I dug on Johnny Bravo, too. I just, like, I can't tell you why, because it was clearly one of those dumb shows.
Yeah.
But I still enjoyed it.
We're almost there. Don't worry about me. Hit him.
No, we gotta wait until he's gasping for a breath.
All right.
Like now.
Hit him. Oh, he's so close.
Well,
it's a game over for Raph. Ran out of lives.
Avenge me!
All right, well, I also have a little bit of trivia for you.
Okay.
And now it is time for Darren's Trivial Trivia.
Yeah.
All right, so everyone knows that Tom Hanks is the voice of Woody in the Toy Story franchise.
There's a snake in my boot, yeah.
Yep.
And when you pick up an officially licensed Toy Story talking Woody doll, that sure sounds like Tom, right?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
That's not Tom.
Yeah.
That's his brother, Jim.
Yep.
In fact, Jim Hanks voices Woody in literally everything other than the main Toy Story films.
Uh-huh.
That's...
Including every single video game appearance, every straight-to-video appearance. That's Jim Hanks.
You know what? I don't know what I expected, but that was kind of awesome.
I knew that. That was awesome. I still like that.
All right.
Jim!
So, are we ready for the next... For the random movie?
Yeah, that's ready for the random
movie.
All right,
for those of you listening live, you don't get to hear it, but for the rest of us, Kent.
Oh, the lights are down low. The popcorn is hot. The drinks are cold. Settle in for the cinematic universe of Chad's Random Movie Review.
By the roll of the dice, the next random movie will be Land of the Lost.
Ooh. Oh, boy.
For this week, though, it's been a good old-fashioned orgy. Eric is a man-child. Despite supposedly having a job, Eric spends most of the time and most of the movie hosting or planning super extravagant parties for his friends and, well, literally everyone else in the neighborhood in his father's vacation home in the Hamptons. As the movie opens, the party theme seems to be rednecks, or hillbillies, or some equally offensive to rural America kind of party. The next morning, Don Johnson, Eric's dad, informs the man boy that he is putting the house on the market. Rather than take this like an adult and either making an offer on the house or realizing that he may have to make different arrangements for his parties, Eric decides to throw one last ultimate party over Labor Day weekend. Unable to come up with a rager of a party, Eric decides, with the help of his friend Mike, that instead, they're going to host an intimate get-together.
It's not a party, it's an intimate get-together.
Okay.
An orgy.
Yes.
Oh, never mind.
Because...
I was thinking of something different.
Because that will be super easy to convince their closest friends to take part in.
Yeah.
Yeah. But they're lamenting the more liberal sexual attitudes of the current time and their parents' time and how they had to live through, you know, such conservative,
yes,
you know, sex negative.
Go ahead.
Stuff.
We finished Turtle Shredder's Revenge, so I'm just going to, like, find something random to play while these guys talk.
Okay. Well, the bulk of the movie is then spent either trying to prevent the house from being sold or convincing the friends to take part. It's all a blur because the movie's not that good. They finally get to Labor Day. They have a great big blowout of an argument. Then they reconcile within about 5 minutes in order to get to the Shakespearean orgy of four girls, four guys. They get to Labor Day. They reconcile. They have an orgy. It's happy endings for everyone.
Literally.
The closing scene is discovering that the house is having a hard time selling because Eric, the man-child, has started up a relationship with one of the realtors who is trying to sell the house.
Uh-huh.
And so with the extra time, they start planning the next party. Credits. The movie is at its best vapid, and I don't recommend it. Not even as a laundry movie.
Ooh.
Don't be like me.
Yikes.
Now, with no other business, thanks to our sponsors, Shirtosaurus and Gamefly.
That is the shortest review I think you've ever done for a movie.
Yeah, it doesn't deserve more.
Yikes.
For those who have already donated to Extra Life, we offer our heartfelt thanks. For those who are waiting, links on the website with all of our geeky news. Join the Discord for some fun conversations. Tell your friends all about where to find us, including Podbean, Apple Podcast, Amazon, Good Pod, and so forth. Don't forget to check out our other offerings, including You Want Me to Watch What in Week 3? Then head over to our YouTube channel, see Geek Cave Plays and Retromantics. For Kent Harris, our Bowser. For Darren Wright, our Mario. For Justin White, our Luigi. I'm Chad Savage, our Princess Daisy. And what the heck am I doing here? Thanks for listening, and remember, everyone is a geek for something.